Hello, and welcome to this, the fifth episode of Season 4 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, last time, Graham, we talked about effectiveness and what it means to say that an AML approach is effective. I'm not sure it's a question we fully answered.
I think you're right, and perhaps that's because there is no single answer to the question. But I think what we can say is that current definitions of effective don't seem to directly address the real victims of crime.
And nor necessarily stop the money launderers plying their trade and profiting from it.
That is very true.
So, by what means is the current approach effective? What is it seeking to achieve and how well is it doing that?
Well, there are daily successes, Ray, but when you look closely at them, success may just be too strong a word. Banks and other firms turn away potential clients that their due diligence and risk appetite lead them to believe they should not do business with.
But that doesn't mean those actors won't find another bank that will be prepared to take them on.
No, Ray, it doesn't. And of course, that means that while the first bank is insulated from the exposure, the second bank isn't, and crucially, nor is the financial system.
And then there are investigations where existing clients raise suspicions, which can be reported to the authorities.
That is also true, but it's very hard to see how much of this ends in thorough law enforcement investigation, let alone prosecution and conviction. In the UK, for instance, the NCA is receiving vast numbers of often unstructured SARs to be shared between a surprisingly small number of investigators.
Well, lots of it will be accumulating as intelligence to be used in the future, of course, and we've no way of knowing how useful this ends up being.
That's true, of course, but it's hard to see how so few people can ever make the kind of difference we all agree we would like to see.
So what is the answer, Graham?
Teamwork, Ray. And I think you put this best with your superhero analogy.
Oh, yes. Most firms' approaches to financial crime are modelled on Batman.
And what's wrong with Batman, Ray?
Well, an awful lot, Graham. Superficially, Batman is pretty effective. He has his Batcave and Batcomputer, of course. But then he has his weaknesses and limitations.
Oh?
Well, yes, his identity has to be kept secret, so he can't network his computer with the police or other crime fighters.
Yeah, anything else?
Yes, the police can't really contact him by conventional means, or without making completely obvious to anyone who can see the bat signal.
And during daylight hours, that doesn't even include Batman himself.
Well, quite so. Then there's the fact that Batman himself has no particular powers, other than reasonable fitness and some gadgets he's developed in secret that don't always work, and that because of secrecy, he can't really invite others to help him improve.
I'm beginning to see what you mean.
That's not all. Although obviously chummy with the police commissioner, he's mistrusted, even disliked by most of the police.
Yeah, and that's not helpful. I suppose he also does tend to go off on his own without keeping them in the loop.
Well, he does, Graham, yeah. And time again, the bad guys know his weak spots and are able to exploit them.
It's a fair point. For all his efforts, Gotham City remains a place that's very far from crime-free. And I've always found it odd that his sidekick is named after a criminal act.
Eh?
Robin, as in robbing and stealing.
Oh, Graham.
I'm sorry. But I think we can agree that Batman isn't the answer. So, Ray, what would be better?
The Avengers, Graham.
Okay, Ray, why?
Well, the Avengers are a team, first and foremost. Each of them has unique powers.
And weaknesses?
Well, yes, and weaknesses, but they can compensate for one another's weaknesses. David Banner has to protect his identity, but that's never going to be possible for Thor. So he can do the things that the Hulk can't.
What, like diplomacy?
Well, indeed, yes. And as a team, they're more than the sum of their parts. They can use their individual powers separately or in a variety of combinations to react flexibly to a whole range of threats and opportunities that would be beyond Batman with or without Robin.
And they talk to each other, don't they?
They do, Graham. They talk, plan, replan and face challenges together.
OK, so what does this mean to us? How can we apply it in the battle against financial crime?
I'm glad you asked, because this is a lesson that the bad guys have already learned.
Well, yes, in our work we see similarities in approach and methodologies between disparate actors that can only mean active sharing of information among those criminal concerns.
That's worth repeating, Graham. The bad guys team up to the benefit of all of them.
That's right. And on our side, Ray, we seem reluctant to do the same thing.
Why is that, Graham?
Oh, for many reasons, Ray. I think the biggest one is probably one of focus. In banks, we don't have the same level of focus that criminals do. Banks have to concern themselves with customer service, shareholder relations, the press, legal and regulatory matters, distribution and so on, as well as making a profit.
Yeah, whereas the money launderer has just a single objective. He or she can dedicate all their resources and attention to it.
Yes, and then there's legal constraints on the bank's ability to share information. The criminals don't have quite the same respect for the law, obviously.
Well, yeah, and the criminals aren't really competing with one another, are they?
Well, no. I mean, there will be rivalries, of course, but by and large, their view will be that no one of them needs another to lose so that they can win.
And that's not the case necessarily in the competitive world of banking and financial services, is it?
No, it's not. And even if the banks can look beyond their competitive mistrust to cooperate with their rivals, there are still bridges to cross to open up that active cooperation to include law enforcement and regulators.
But whenever it has happened, there are worthwhile outcomes, aren't there?
Well, yes, and a couple of UK examples spring to mind. There's the tech sprints hosted by the FCA, where regtechs and financial services firms collaborate in teams to come up with new approaches to specific issues and share their findings with all the other participants. And then, of course, there's Gimlet.
Oh, yes, the Joint Money Laundering Intelligence Task Force. This was set up in 2016 and involves UK law enforcement agencies regularly convening with banks to share information.
It's regarded as having improved the quality of SARs subsequently submitted by participating banks, and at the time of the Economic Crime Plan last year, was said to have contributed to the seizure or restraint of more than £34 million in illicit funds. Mm. And it's certainly an idea that's now being emulated in many other countries.
But perhaps the longest bridge to cross is the one to the press.
Yeah, and that really is a hard one to cross. And there's a long history of mutual mistrust. Do you know, but I'm convinced, Ray, that that's in its own way self-perpetuating. If the banks and the media don't spend time and effort understanding one another, then there's a very real risk they'll view one another as the bad guys and let the real bad guys run rings around them both.
We're coming back to the fines episode now, Graham, and the reputational impact, aren't we? Banks are right to fear the press as far as they're reputationally vulnerable, aren't they?
Well, yes, Ray, to a point. But if they fundamentally readdress their relationship with the press, there are big wins.
Tell us more about that, Graham.
Well, right now, banks are trying to fulfil their legal and regulatory obligations and to remediate where, in the past, they have failed to fulfil those requirements. And I think this is an honest and earnest attempt to do the right thing.
Meanwhile, the press are frustrated that the banks won't be open with them. Because of that, they don't know about the really significant efforts some banks, pretty much all banks, are making to do the right thing.
Yes, it's as though banks fear the worst will emerge from their dealings with the press and act accordingly, which leads the press to believe that banks have something to hide and then they, the media, act accordingly.
We've got a marvellous, very recent example of the consequences of this, Graham.
Well, yes, we have. Now, Deutsche Bank, who we talk about regularly, have been criticised for the very large amounts they cleared from the Danske Estonia flows.
About $150 billion or so of it.
Yeah, which is quite a lot. So when there is any information at all coming to light about Deutsche's clearing, its correspondent bank activities, that the press tend to leap on it as further evidence of wrongdoing.
And this time the information is about payments by Joe Lowe into Cyprus.
Yeah, that's right. He, of course, was the 1MDB man.
1MDB was the sovereign wealth fund of Malaysia that seems to have been plundered quite extensively.
Plundered, that's a great word. yes, and Deutsche Bank, it has emerged, was the correspondent bank that cleared a suspect payment from Falcon Bank in his Swiss account to the Bank of Cyprus, apparently on Joe Lowe's behalf.
And in the light of our current understanding of his role in the 1MDB scandal, this is significant, isn't it?
Yeah, Ray, and that's the point. In retrospect, this is a transfer Deutsche may not have wanted to be associated with. However, when the clearing payment was made, 1MDB was still just a breaking story. This was the year prior to Interpol issuing a red notice for Joe Lowe. Nobody knew then, in the same detail, that they know now.
I think at that time, nobody would have hesitated over such a payment. This doesn't look like something Deutsche Bank can be fairly criticised for, does it?
Well, not really, Ray, no. I mean, maybe more for the sending and receiving banks, you know, the criticism, but that's a source of funds issue more than an adverse media one. Correspondent banks simply are not equipped to scan every payee or payor against the entire globe's adverse media database. It's just not possible. But the relationship between banks and the media, and this particular bank is not alone in this, means that the kind of dialogue that would clear this sort of thing up just isn't happening.
And what are we going to do about that, Graham?
I am so glad you asked, Ray. We're going to try and get the good guys to get together and have a chat.
Yes, we are. We're hosting an anti-financial crime conference with A Difference.
Yeah, and the difference is we want to get lots of different constituent groups to come together in one place. We want people from banks, from regtechs and consultancies, but also from regulators, lawmakers, advocacy organisations, law enforcement and the financial media.
Yes, we've been working with our friends from FSCOM to make this a reality.
Yeah, in fact, it was their idea in the first place.
Well, yes, credit where it's due. We're running the event on Thursday the 24th of September in London. We're calling it the Dark Money Conference.
And we're busy assembling, if I can use that word, speakers and panels from all those constituency groups, and we will have a unique day, I'd say.
How can people get involved, Graham?
Good question, Ray. Details are at the website, darkmoneyconf.com, where anyone can register interest and will receive updates as more details emerge.
And lots of people have already registered, Graham.
So I am given to understand, Ray.
Okay, that's going to increasingly exercise us in the coming months. But in the short term, what are we going to cover next time on the podcast, Graham?
Well, Ray, the European Banking Federation have just released a report on, quote, fighting dirty money in the EU.
Ooh, sounds right up our street, Graham.
Well, it does. So I thought we'd take the opportunity to have a closer look and share our thoughts with the listeners.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.